Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Joining you for something of a special edition podcast tonight is, of course, the legendary Mark Daly. You've also got, of course, myself, Mark Hamilton. And this is going to be a bit of a unique twist, a bit of a spin, something we haven't done before. But we're here to react to the Netflix premiere of Drive to Survive Season 3, which dropped on Friday. If you don't know about it, you have probably been in a cave or somewhere far away from electricity for the last couple of days, because this has absolutely consumed the Formula One ecosystem.
Yeah.
To me, like at a very high level, and I'm going to pass it over to you quickly because I'm dying to hear your thoughts, because we haven't talked about this. We haven't shared thoughts. We haven't WhatsApped. Like, I have no idea what your thoughts are, but high level, to me, this was the best of the three seasons that we've seen so far. Yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed it. What about you?
Yeah, well, I sat down on Friday night after dinner, after the kids were in bed, and I sat down and I binged the first 8 episodes. And, you know, it took me another 2 days to finish off the last two, but riveting, compelling. I mean, they do an amazing job. I think they could make a trip to Costco to do groceries. Look exciting. I mean, they do an absolutely fantastic job. And yeah, I 100% with what you have to say. I think out of the three seasons they've done to date, this is by far and away the best one yet. Absolutely top marks to them.
And I think one of the things that made this one a little bit more compelling, or it was easier to get into it, is unlike season one or season two, where they really had to set up and kind of lay the groundwork for what Formula One is and who the teams are and how the sport works. This one, they jumped right in. They jumped right into Barcelona and winter testing, and it was away. So it was really easy to get traction very, very, very quickly. I think one of the things early on that I really enjoyed as well is, and it was a bit of a setup. There's that scene where Zach Brown's walking around the McLaren headquarters, and he just happens to get a phone call from Chase Carey, and he's like, oh, so we're going to have a season and we're going to be in the Middle East. Uh-huh. Sounds good. And then you're off to the first race. Like, I thought that was a little bit cheesy, but I was glad that they didn't spend too much time kind of zeroed in on the kind of the 2 or 3 month break between where the season was suspended in Australia and where they picked it up. You know, we went to Australia, we kind of recapped what happened there, and then it was straight to Austria. And I was very, very happy they didn't spend a lot of time dwelling on that. We've lived through it. I don't think we needed to revisit that in too much detail, but I loved how quickly they got on with the season.
Yeah, you know, any time spent not dwelling on what happened, you know, a year ago and any sort of the ongoing, you know, day-to-day life in a pandemic, you know, I'm absolutely fine with that. I mean, I think that, you know, Zach even says at one point, it's like, we're back to business after 10 weeks, you know, sitting around doing nothing. It was, I kind of like the way that they handled it. I mean, obviously, it's pretty heavy pandemic related when you have like the recap in Australia and everything getting shut down prior to all that. And you got the social distancing, the masks and the lack of fans, you know, except for some races that, you know, like the Nürburgring, for example, you know, where there are fans in the stands for those ones. But yeah, very well done. You know, it was kind of cheesy, but I mean, it fits their narrative and the way that that they want to set these things up. But, you know, I think that what I really liked about this one is, like you're saying, the first two seasons was almost kind of like setting the stage. I mean, now it really seemed to really be focusing more on the personalities and more of the stories that we saw in 2020. And I think they did a great job really highlighting some of the amazing people and the amazing personalities in Formula One. And after, you know, sitting down and watching this, and you know, my big takeaway is, now if Lance comes out and sucks the next 2 years, I have no doubt his dad will fire him. 100%. 100%. Any questions? My takeaway on Lawrence Stroll, I mean, he's obviously an uber successful businessman, intimidating, hardcore, hard-nosed, arrogant, a little bit aloof. I think he has an extreme eye for detail and he expects the best. He is absolutely not there to just make up the numbers. I mean, he's there to win.
Absolutely. Everything that we saw of Lawrence Stroll in this program reinforced everything that you and I kind of assumed, right? Like, hey, you know what? He's probably not going to sit on Lance if he's underperforming. Like, he's built all of this to win a championship. Yep. And if Lance isn't going to do that, he's gone. And you're totally right. Like, just that one of the initial scenes where he's at the factory in Silverstone and he's in that boardroom and they're doing the presentation. Like, I had chills. And I was sweating as if I was the next person that had to present financial results to him. But, and I think it was Jenny Gao. And by the way, kudos to Netflix for bringing Jenny Gow on. It was really great to have some more female presence in the program, just commentating and sharing their thoughts on the season. So that was great. But she made that comment early on about how much presence he had. Holy moly. Yeah. You can feel when he walks in a room.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my. That was a really, really astute comment that she made. And she's excellent. I love the work that she does. But, you know, yeah, it was just amazing stuff just watching him. He was one of the obvious personalities that kind of jumped out. I mean, Zach Brown, I mean, he was right there from the beginning. He features throughout. I mean, there's a lot of the McLaren people in there, just quite a bit. You know, and just going back to Racing Point, though, I just the contrast between Stroll Senior and Stroll Junior. I mean, Lance is a very relatable guy. I mean, he seems like, I mean, apart from his job, of course, I mean, he seems like a pretty normal 20-something-year-old kid, right? And, you know, I mean, he seems like a little bit kind of goofy. I mean, he seems, you know, like, I mean, he's focused on, you know, his job as a racing driver. But, you know, I had the feeling is that I think Lawrence Stroll was probably always that way. I bet you that growing up, he was probably the serious one, the focused one. And I mean, that's where he's gotten to where he is in life and what he's achieved, right? And, you know, I thought it was kind of funny at one point, you know, what I think the first interview that they have with Lance in that first episode is like, well, what's the relationship that you have with your father? Well, let's just say we go way back. You know, it's kind of funny. I was just like, I don't think his dad would kind of like framed it the same way. But very, very interesting, you know, very, very cool stuff.
I thought it was really funny. And I recall that exact comment. I thought it was interesting as well. And they kind of, and I don't want to spend too much time on Racing Point because there's so much to unpack, but I like the fact that they drew that contrast between Lawrence and Lance. And there's even that scene, and I think it was at one of the Silverstone race weekends where you see Lance walking and it's hot and he curses and he's like, I wish I was surfing or I wish we were surfing. But you know, like he's got interests beyond the sport. And obviously his dad is a laser focused businessman. I think the one other comment I would just have on Racing Point was I thought Otmar's comments, and it was funny because they talk about how there was almost this alliance that came against Racing Point for the whole brake duck fiasco. But there's a point where Otmar makes that comment about Zach Brown never having designed a single point part of a racing car. And what does he know? I thought that that was the kind of the juicy nuggets that I was looking for in this program. But I thought everything about Racing Point was really thrilling. I think the other big takeaway for me was they spent an awful lot of time talking about Haas. Yes. And I think the takeaway that I had there was one, everything that kind of happened in the offseason in terms of their new deep ties with the Russian petrochemical company and the position of Mazepin in that racing seat and the fact that he wasn't outwardly disciplined, it became abundantly clear throughout this program that team is operating on an absolute shoestring budget. Mm-hmm. I don't think they were even certain themselves if they'd finish out the season. You saw Gunther Steiner's out shopping for sponsorships during the season to bring
during
money
a pandemic.
On board. Exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. And then I would cringe as well. Like you would see Gunther after a race and you know that phone call from Gene Haas is coming. And it was just so awkward watching those conversations. And he's almost like, I get it. I get it. We're doing better. I get it. And then Gene was like, and like, I remember there was that one scene where I think it was Magnussen went off and he crumpled the front of the back of the car. And Gene's like, and he's having to explain to Gene Haas, the owner of the Haas team, like, hey, yes, there's damage to the front and rear suspension because there's financial implications to the damage. Like it was, I thought it was very telling. And the way that the offseason played out for Haas in terms of bringing on the pay driver and that Russian sponsorship money, it all makes total sense to me now.
Yeah, I also thought it was really interesting too how they sort of really brought in that Mick Schumacher weekend at the Nürburgring and the Alfa Romeo garage. Yep. I thought that was very, very fascinating. And I mean, they featured pretty heavily in the first couple of seasons as well. I mean, Gunther really stood out as one of the, you know, the big personalities, you know, flamboyant personalities in the first couple of years, right? So, I mean, it just kind of made sense, but it really kind of framed it, I think, in a very interesting context, just, you know, their struggles almost right from the very beginning. And like you said, I mean, how tight the purse strings really were. I mean, it was really something to see him, like you say, in the middle of a season and in the middle of a pandemic going out and trying to get new sponsors on board. And I thought it was very interesting, too, in that one meeting that he had, that they were saying, well, you know, German sponsors, you know, we want to have a German driver in the car. So, I mean, you can just kind of see, I mean, there were a lot of reasons, obviously, why you'd want to get a guy like Mick Schumacher into your car. I mean, young and unproven as he is, but I mean, it just ticks so many boxes on so many different levels for so many different people to get a guy like him into the car. Anyways, Mark, let's just take a quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. We'll be back. We're breaking down season 3 of Netflix's hit series, Drive to Survive. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. Mark and Mark, Daly and Hamilton, breaking down the Netflix Uber series Drive to Survive Season 3. Mark, you know, we've talked about, well, we talked about Racing Point and the strolls in the first segment and some of the struggles and the things that we saw with Haas. What else that really stood out for you? For me, I think it's one thing that we see, or we don't maybe talk enough about in Formula One, is just how manicured and how crafted the whole presentation is. I find it very similar to like the NFL, just the way that everything's managed. And we don't see a lot of the human side of it. You know, you don't see the shots of like the mechanics or the team personnel in the garage, you know, like watching them like every pass, every fouled up pit stop, just the emotion and the passion. And a lot of like the, you know, the real emotion for good or for worse, you know, like depending on what happens at the end of the race on the Sunday. And I mean, I really felt that at some of these moments were really portrayed well. I mean, the one of the moments I think that I really wanted to know more about was episode 9, Man on Fire. Obviously the whole Grosjean crash at Bahrain. I mean, I had some serious emotion. I had a big, you know, lump in my throat going, you know, like when you see that. And I mean, of course, they dragged it out for a long, long time just to emphasize the point. But you can see what's going on. Will Buxton, I mean, I think he nailed it. Like he was very succinct in what he said. There's very few times in Formula One when the paddock goes completely silent.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, I actually have a note here about that as well. They certainly drew out the suspense of that scene. I think there was a couple of other takeaways there. One, there was a lot of footage that hasn't been shown before.
Yes.
So there was some footage that none of us have seen before that was reserved or captured specifically for this moment. The one thought that I had watching that is there's a lot of folks that were probably watching this show over the weekend that weren't aware that that happened. That didn't know it, like for you and me, like we know what the outcome was. So even for us, it was still very suspenseful and there was a lot of tension. But for people that maybe didn't know, like maybe they dragged it out a little bit too long. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting, but I absolutely agree. And I do love, and you're right, like the broadcast package that we see every Sunday is highly sanitized.
Yep.
We don't see the emotion in the pit. We don't see the emotion in the garage. We don't see the emotion at the control booth. And I love the fact that, and I think there was the scene again, I think it was probably the Magnussen crash where you can see how angry the mechanics are in that pit. They're swearing, cursing. They're angry at the driver. They're angry at their own performance. Like, it's very unsanitized, and yeah, I really enjoyed that.
I love it.
Yeah. And the other thing too, and this was a big takeaway for me too, is how attached the handlers are to the drivers and correcting everything that they say. There was that scene where one of the publicists was correcting Vettel because he'd make this offhanded joke about how bad their performance was. And the handler's like, no, you can't joke. We don't get to joke based on our performance. And he basically like, our performance is a joke, so why not? But I thought it was interesting how closely the drivers are followed by their handlers around the pits. And every time they do an interview, they're sitting 3 feet away from them. And
with the microphone, with their iPhone or whatever, just recording the conversation, right?
Exactly. Yeah. What for you, what were some of the big misses? Like, what were some of the things that you were expecting to see that they didn't capture? Knowing that in 10 episodes, they were never going to be able to capture the entire season. But if there was a couple of big absences, what do you think those were?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting, too. I think it just goes to demonstrate, trying to film a series like this during the pandemic. Because, I mean, there were some tracks that were featured quite a bit. Austria was what was one. The Middle East races were another. But, I mean, we didn't see really anything from some of the European races except for stock footage from, like, Imola, from Portimao, Mugello. There was absolutely nothing from Mugello at all. You know, Silverstone, that made sense. I mean, we had a couple of races there. So those were things I thought were kind of interesting, but I guess, maybe what with travel restrictions and quarantine, that maybe they really had to pick and choose the dates that and the events that they were going to film at. And I think the one team that was very conspicuous in their absence was Williams. I mean, there was only just a couple of shots here and there. I mean, especially I think it was with the whole pink Mercedes fiasco. I mean, there was a couple of just the little clips featuring Claire Williams here and there. And then also when they kind of disappeared after their last race at Monza, I think that was, that was another. But I think those were some of the really sort of ones that really jump out. I think they captured a lot of the stories that we saw during the year. I think that it was interesting that they focused on the McLaren dynamic between Sainz and Norris. I mean, Ricardo, of course, we know what a great personality he is. I thought it was interesting to frame his story in there as well, and especially I think it was really interesting too to get like a lot of those sort of really personal interviews with Cyril Abiteboul and just how torn up he was, like,
totally
personally. That I mean, yep. He says that it really hit him personally, like Daniel's decision to move on to go to McLaren, and how deeply that affected him. I think it was also really cool to see like a lot of the behind scenes stuff with Carlos Sainz and his family, especially. I think it was kind of cool to see the old man, who was also a very successful rally driver in his time. And, Carlos Sainz, he's quiet, he's reserved, he just goes about his business, but he's kind of got, I kind of feel like a renewed kind of, sense, not an obligation, but just sort of that I find he's a real underdog, and I sort of really get a real sort of sense of the ginormous, the enormity of the situation that he is in Ferrari. I think those are some of the more interesting ones. I mean, there's tons of great things to talk about. I mean, there was the one whole episode, we need to talk about Ferrari, which we've talked about for months and months and months on this show, but I think they did a really good job, kind of like highlighting some of like the woes that they had, and just like how disastrous that that weekend at Monza was last year.
Absolutely. One of the senses I got as well, and you're right, the Carlos Sainz footage was great, but if you flash back to season one, there was a ton of very personal footage with him, with his family, and I think some of the sense I get is that some of the drivers are just more open to this type of exposure. Yeah. And it's interesting because there's a ton of Red Bull conversation. Focus on Albon. There's a ton of focus on Christian Horner. There's that fierce kind of storyline about the move with Gasly. You got to see how really embittered Gasly was, even a year removed from his demotion. Yeah. I thought that was really interesting. But there's no Max Verstappen at all. And you would think he'd be a really compelling kind of person to inject into the storyline. But from everything I read, because I actually went looking, this was a conscious decision that he and his family made, that they don't want to be a part of this, that they've been very critical of it. And as a result, he was effectively excised from it. But you're right, the Williams absence was notable. The almost complete absence of the George Russell story in that second weekend at Bahrain, I thought was a little bit interesting. I would love to have seen a little bit more in Turkey, but I think to your point, for cost reasons, maybe they just didn't have the crew there that weekend. You know, we saw a little snippet of stock footage of Lance taking qualifying, but that was about it. I think those were some of the big kind of misses for me, but I think they did so much right. And again, they had 8 hours, 10 episodes to put this together. And so much happened last year in that compressed 17 race calendar that they weren't going to make everybody happy, but I left very, very, very satisfied. And I left, and I loved, to your point as well, the Cyril discussion and kind of how frustrated or angry he was about the Daniel Ricciardo situation, I thought was great. And I loved how candid and honest and authentic everyone was when they were being interviewed. And even Daniel, when they asked him, was like, hey, look, you know what drove this decision? He's like, look, I just had to look my career short. And at the end of the day, I just think McLaren's in a better position than Renault is. And Cyril at the same time was like, I was expecting that we would have the opportunity to show him what we're capable of. Like, all of this was really good stuff. And you don't get this through, you don't get this through the clickbait. You don't get these through those comments in the pit on a race weekend. Like, this is really good stuff.
Oh yeah. It's raw. It's pure. It's emotional. A lot of it. And it just, it feels very real. You know, it is completely, you know, it's the real deal. And I think that's what really resonates with people. I mean, when you see some of these stories like Gasly winning at Monza, Sergio Perez winning at Bahrain without even knowing whether or not he's got a drive in Formula One for this year. I mean, those are some great stories. And, you know, you just can't help, you know, wanting to root for these guys. And, you know, I do find it interesting that that Verstappen didn't want to be involved with it at all. Because, I mean, you know, when you see, and I mean, I guess, you know, it's got its negatives, but on the other side, it's got the positives because it gives some of these other personalities a chance to shine. I mean, another one I want to talk to you about is the whole episode that I think was devoted to Valtteri Bottas, one of the early episodes in the season. And I think we'll do that when we just take another break here in a moment, and we'll come back and talk about that. But I found that to be quite revealing, and I think it showed a side of Valtteri Bottas that maybe none of us really were expecting. Anyways, we'll talk about that in a moment here on the Overtime Media Network on the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One. So stick around. We'll be back in just a moment. All right. Well, welcome back to the show. We're just wrapping up our verdict, our ranking, if you want to call it that, of season 3 of Drive to Survive on Netflix. So we spent all weekend doing this, and I know most of you probably did the same thing, and especially with, the fact that life is still obviously not back to normal. This is the ideal way to spend spend a weekend, especially 1 week out from the start of the 2021 Formula One World Championship. And it certainly was really, really time well spent, let's put it that way. But I wanted to talk now about Valtteri Bottas. He was featured heavily in episode 3 called Nobody's Fool, and the description says here, determined to emerge from Lewis Hamilton's shadow, Mercedes driver Valtteri Bottas seizes his chance at the Russian Grand Prix. And, you know, it was quite interesting because, there was some of these more raw moments, you know, the interviewers asking Toto about, Valtteri being his number 2 driver. And, you know, this being a sort of rated E for everyone, let's just say that Toto answered that question with like enough F-bombs to try and drown it out. And he says, I'm just going to say this so, you know, nobody can hear your question. I think the response from the interviewer was, well, I think some of them heard part of it anyways, but it was funny. And I think there's the other thing is too, I mean, like Toto, I mean, he's obviously a very, very successful team principal. I mean, he does a great job at Mercedes. And I think this series, again, it shows the more real side. I mean, that response that he had to that question shows that kind of like a cheeky, you know, like a side of Toto, maybe kind of downplaying or maybe, responding to a question that gets under his skin a little bit. But, you know, again, shows a very human side to him, which, you know, of course, normally we don't see. But again, that episode on Bottas, I thought was very interesting. And, you know, I mean, he says all the right things and that, you know, how he's determined to win and how he's going to beat Lewis Hamilton. We've talked about it quite a bit, obviously, on the show. And I mean, just, you know, how difficult a task that is. But I thought it was very interesting, you know, that question that was left after the Russian Grand Prix was, did he intentionally finish third in qualifying? Because knowing that third is the, you either want to start on pole or in third, just because you get that toe going down that very long, bendy, straightaway into that first real corner, that 90-degree right-hander. And I think that it was very interesting the way that that Bottas, you know, he's not really a very flamboyant, outgoing personality. I guess, he's very, very Finnish in that regard. But, I think it was very interesting. He's got a bit of a smirk on his face. So did I do that on purpose or not, just to kind of screw up Lewis? And he says, kind of, well, maybe that's just something for me to know. I thought that was a really, really cool moment.
I would like, honestly, and you and I have talked about this so much, and I don't want to spend too much time on Bottas, but I would like to see more of that from him. Like, I'd like to see that V3 Bottas that's willing to take those chances. I also thought it was pretty raw when you saw the footage about Bottas being asked to do some things on the track that obviously weren't necessarily in his favor. I just want to add just as well, you made that comment about Toto's response to that question from the reporter and the barrage of F-bombs that followed. I thought it was interesting how frequently that word is used throughout the sport, all the time, by everyone, all the time. And it made me feel a little bit better, because I tend to overuse that word off the air as well. And I feel that now more than ever that I would probably fit in. You know, the one other piece, and I know we've got to kind of wrap this up, but I think the one thing that I thought was, and I don't know how I feel about this, but I thought it was notable that there was a complete absence of acknowledgement of the We Races One initiative that kicked off in Austria. It kind of petered out mid-season. They didn't address it. They didn't talk about it. And then right at the end, at the very tail end of episode 10, they've got Lewis, and he's asked some questions, and he gets to speak a little bit about what it's like being the only Black driver in the sport and the burden that he carries as a result. But I almost thought that was a bit of a disservice both to Lewis and to the topic as a whole, that there wasn't more of a central focus on it. Because if you remember back to Austria at the beginning of last season, there was drivers that obviously didn't want to participate or weren't as enthused. And, you know, I remember those comments from Charles Leclerc and some of the other drivers that, hey, you know, if we take too strong a stand, we risk offending other people. And I think there could have been more that would have been unpacked there. And it was almost worse that they kind of did it a disservice and jammed it into the last couple of minutes of episode 10, as opposed to not even addressing it. But I thought I felt like Netflix owed the sport and owed that topic a little bit more time. I don't know how to kind of phrase that, but I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't address it a little bit more openly.
Yeah, you know, I kind of got the impression that it's either, you know, we don't know how to deal with this or we're not, or it's too uncomfortable and, you know, we don't know how to deal with this either, you know? So it kind of left it, you know, it was kind of like one of these sort of obvious things that really needed to be addressed. So, yeah, I mean, the way that they dealt with it, it kind of had kind of like a tacked on, almost like obligated kind of a feel.
Exactly.
I mean, because the way that it's like the whole pandemic thing. You see the masks, you see the social distancing, you see all that sort of stuff. But then every once in a while, you see a guy walking around the End Racism t-shirt or the We Races One hashtag on the side pod of a car or on a face mask or on a poster somewhere. So, I mean, that was, one of those things that probably should have been addressed. I mean, but again, yeah, that was just a bit of an odd way, the way that they decided to handle it. But kind of going back to what you were just saying about like the abundance of F-bombs in the show, I think now, especially for the newcomers, we all know what the F and F1 stands for, and perhaps it's not formula, but anyways, bad jokes aside, I mean, I think that is one of the cool things, because you know that not necessarily all the profanity, but how sanitized like the radio clips that we get like during the race broadcast are. And I know they kind of floated it around last year, you know, like I can't remember if it was in a fan survey or something like that, just about the possibility of having full like unfettered access to race radio. I'd be like, oh yeah, well, bring it on, you know, like you know, I'm an adult, you know, I can handle the bad language, you know. I suppose that there would be a reason to cut the radio in certain circumstances, obviously like the Grosjean crash, that would be one, but under normal circumstances, you know, why not? I'm sure that there's probably listening in to other team radios within the paddock. So why not? You know, so that would be one of my wish lists for the future. If we could have something like that added into a race broadcast, I think it'd be great.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. I think the risk always is, especially in a world which is maybe more hypersensitive to certain expressions and things, there's kind of a risk and a concern from the drivers and the teams. But I'll tell you, if it was available through the F1 TV Pro app,
yep,
I would be switching between drivers the entire race. Like, what's he saying? What's like that? That's really compelling, yep, material. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, you know, I think that's really all I got. And I could probably go for hours and we could unpack so many different storylines that they address. But just in the spirit of keeping this kind of compact and a little bit more focused, I think that's the big stuff for me. Anything else from your perspective that you wanted to touch on?
Well, I mean, we could drive down into detail into every single episode and every single storyline like we usually do around here. But I think we've hit a lot of the high points. So I'm going to just put you on the spot right now. Rate this one out of a score from 1 to 10, low or 1 obviously being lowest, 10 being highest. How would you score season 3? I know what my score is.
Yeah, so I think in terms of production quality, the production quality is exceptional. The setup top-notch of the interviews, yep, the quality of the footage, the amount, the lack of reluct or the lack of that, I would say they could have been heavily reliant on stock footage from race weekends and they weren't. They have cameras everywhere.
Yep.
So oftentimes, yep, you're seeing the same thing, but you're seeing it through these beautiful 4K cinematic lenses that you don't see on the broadcast. So in terms of production quality, 9 out of 10. In terms of assembling the package and kind of blending it all together, I'd probably say an 8 out of 10. And for me, that's high praise. I still think that they can improve next year and I still think there's some other things that they can do. So mm-hmm. I don't want to go in with too high a score, but I would give them an 8 out of 10 for sure. What about you?
I was going to say I was going to go for a solid 8.5 out of 10. I mean, for some of the obvious reasons why, we discussed where they could have gone a little bit better. I mean, I think that they've raised the bar on the series and, if this is going to be an annual thing for the time coming, I think that they're doing a wonderful job. And I think that that everybody involved should be happy about it because, you know, we've seen on this show just with the amount of messages we get from people say, hey, I found your podcast. You know, I'm new to F1. I saw seasons 1 and 2 of Drive to Survive and I was instantly hooked. And I mean, it's doing the job that it is. And it doesn't matter if you're new to F1 or you've been around for a long time. I mean, it seems to really grab people's attention. And I think it's wonderful. I mean, like you say, I mean, the footage that they've captured on their own, the way that they've packaged everything, the stories that they tackled for the most part, I think they did a wonderful job. I'm looking forward, obviously, going into the season and looking forward to about this time next year to see season 4. So anyways, I think we'll wrap it up there. This is sort of was a real spontaneous, decision to jump on the mics this evening and wrap this one up. And we'll be back in a couple of days. We're almost there. Less than this time next week, we're going to be sitting down, Mark. We'll be doing our first race recap of the season. It seems absolutely crazy, but I can't wait to get into it. And until then, of course, we've got the regular weekly show coming up later this week. If you want to get in touch, easiest ways to do so on Twitter at @ScuderiaF1Pod and on the email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. That's it. That's a wrap. Catch you guys in a couple days. Have a great week and less than 7 days to go. We're almost there, guys. Have a good one. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.